Okay, before we get started, I'd rather be laughed at for making a wrong decision than criticized for not making the right decision. Don't know what this weather is going to do. It looks like the heart will get snow, how much, where it is, it's still, as you know, rough hands, not the sharpest knife in Detroit. But there's a good possibility we should have a decent winter storm event coming in Thursday night and Friday morning. So what I have decided to do for the safety of the staff, commissioners, and the attendees is to move our action items for Friday up to Thursday. The reports that we're normally due on Friday, we will just include those in our main meetings agenda. Everybody seems to be good about doing that. I just want to let everybody know far ahead of time about what we're doing. The two action items on Friday normally don't take a lot of public interest, but I still want to be in front of everybody knows what we're doing, why we're doing it. And so there you go. So if anybody will be out here tomorrow night, we may run a little bit later, but so be it. Good evening, everyone. I'm Rob Lizzle, Chairman of the North Carolina Marine Fisheries Commission. I'd like to welcome you to our public comment session where you have a unique opportunity to, on the record, to comment or ask questions in regards to the Marine Fisheries Commission's management of the state's public trust, estuary, and marine resources. I ask you to limit your comments and questions to 3 minutes. I remind you that you have approximately 30 seconds left. Please direct any comments and questions to me, and I'll fill them to the appropriate commission or staff member if needed. If you address the commission tonight, you will not be allowed to do so tomorrow. Remember, this is a time to share a concern and gather information, not be confrontational. I will not allow the conducting of business of our state to be disrupted by outbursts or calls from the audience. If you do so, you will be escorted from the meeting and not allowed to return during the formal meeting. Consider this the one and only warning about this type of behavior. Our first one up tonight is going to be Thomas Coltrane, followed by David Steele. Yes, come right up here to this table. Make sure you got a little green light on this mic. And you state your name. And if y'all are associated with any group, please say so.
My name is Thomas Coltrane.
Jeff, shake your mic. I think it's on. Yes. The present button right here is on.
Okay. Is it on now?
I think so, yeah.
My name is Thomas Coltrane, and I'm not associated with any group other than the North Carolina Wildlife Commission. I'll start off by saying, one day my dad and I were trout fishing in the Bay River, and a net boat came by and started putting out nets and forced us to move. Dad told me that one day this would be the downfall of fishing in North Carolina. This was over 50 years ago, and that day, fast approaching. Not because of the nets, but because of the way you have managed the fisheries in North Carolina. They have done what you have allowed them to do, just like the recreational have done what you have told them to do. The great trout limit is 1, flounder 0, closed season, striped bass 0, closed season, herring 0, closed. Spoke to trout with a limit of 4. Looks like we're about to go all in North Carolina when it comes to recreational fishing. I remember one year, I may be wrong on the year, but not on this state. 2010, we had a large trout, stun freeze, and trout season was closed for recreational fishing and left open commercial fishing to sell what trout that did not die, that managed sale of the fish. And captain for the sale of fish for the sale of fish and not for the sustainability of the fish stock. Now for flounder, you have closed the season different times for recreational versus commercial. When you close a fishery, it should be closed for everyone at the same time. If you are really interested in saving the fish, you gave the prime time to commercial for the sale of the fish. Closed is closed. Why do you continue to let out-of-state shrimpers, trawlers, and netter
groupers
come to North Carolina and do what they cannot do in their home state? I have heard now that the crab will be depleted. Do you think they were caught on hooking lines or in trawlers in nursery areas? I think each and every one of you knows what the problem is in North Carolina. Are reluctant to do anything to make the big money behind the sale of seafood up sea. When we have small mom and pop, we
probably
don't.
And next is David Sneed, followed by Sir Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Steen, and I'm the Executive Director of the Coastal Conservation Association in North Carolina. We would like to offer our comments in support of potential rulemaking on small mass kill nets. This is my 3-minute version of the larger document you received electronically. The kill net free zones established upstream in the Pamlico and Neuse rivers have saved two Goodyear classes of stripers that are present in these systems. These fish are remaining in the systems that are currently in place, ready to move up the rivers this spring to spawn. Mild winters and ideal environmental conditions for successful spawns have resulted in a trifecta boom in 3 species, speckled trout, red drum, and striped bass. The upstream net free zones are not responsible for this boom, but these large protected areas resulting from the net restrictions have provided a sanctuary for these fish. The reduced bag limits and increased size limit on speckled trout and coastal recreational anglers have also played a huge role in the rebound of these stocks. These sanctuaries allow these larger, spawning size speckled trout a chance to escape harvest and grow another season, resulting in an abundant stock now targeted by both recreational and commercial fishermen. The Commission needs to recognize the extraordinary gift we have been given by Mother Nature and do everything in its power protect these abundant stocks for future generations. The public trust interest in these natural resources should be protected for the majority, not allowed to be exploited by the few. The reason for the gillnet free zones was to protect several mid-year classes of striped bass. They are still out there. The need to protect these fish is just as great as it was when the closures were first established. If anything, the need to maintain the gillnet free zones is greater than before. Consideration should be given to expanding this gillnet sanctuary to the mouths of the Pamlico, Neuse, and Bay Rivers, or simply use the current tide lines. These closed areas would also serve to meet the additional reductions needed in southern flounder catch in 2020, and will also protect an exceptional year class of red drum that are currently 15 to 17 inches. I have also presented you with a copy of a letter from Eric Bachman, the maker of the world famous mural. He says in part, I commend you for removing the use of entangled nets in the Neuse and Pamlico rivers in 2019. These actions have proven beneficial for our company, allowing for increased sales and profits for us and our partner stores in the area. By tracking the sales of our products in our retail stores, it's clear that the removal of nets from these rivers provide positive results in increased catches and contribute to a noticeable economic impact for businesses. On a separate note, we'd also like to offer our support for rulemaking on tarpon to make it a no-kill fishery, hooking line only, no sale, no concessions fishery. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Sir Frank, followed by Gregory G.
Guys, we are not excited. I'm sure I'm going to run along. I hope you got the email that I sent out to you and that you'll read that, particularly with regard to the shrimp trawling, the large mesh that I own, I won't get time to speak about that. I do want to say right off the bat that I support every single measure that is being proposed for the management of shrimp, the reduced tow times, reduced headboat length, sanctuary areas, inland corridors. Every bit of that is positive and should be acted on. However, I think ultimately you got to start to see it's time, past time, to get those trawlers out of the sand. Now, while this will not be an unusual request for me, it's one that bears repeating. It is time to remove gill nets from our inshore waters. In previous comments, I've given numerous reasons for doing so, and I hope I will add a few more tonight that are even more compelling. First, and most importantly, you have a living laboratory in two major river systems right now, and they are clearly showing the difference in and the importance of having net-free areas in these rivers. When the nets poured out of the Neuse and Pamlico rivers above the ferry lines this spring, the stage was set. Then, a relatively dry year with lots of northeast wind brought favorable conditions to these areas with lots of salty water as none of the As the summer moved into fall and winter, the fish moved into these protected areas, and to put it simply, the bite has been epic. Hundreds of boats have filled these river systems constantly and have had a part in the trout bite that has been consistently fantastic. I'm close friends with several of the guides in the area, and many of them have described the fishing as the best they have ever seen. Several of them have been on the water for more than 30 years, and that makes their comments all the more impressive. Personally, I've caught trout farther upriver than I ever have, and the number of puppy drum in those areas is the best that I've seen in over 20 years. 3 minutes is not enough time to get into the population dynamics of a healthy fishery, but these anecdotal comments are an example of how a stable population will occupy primary and secondary habitat stations and remain there when they aren't being sand out constantly. Although you can't keep any, the striper bite has also been great. What's more, the fishing has remained consistently good with plenty of large trout supplemented by bad stripers and worse bugs. I'm even more excited that this was only the first year of the gill net restrictions and they were only put in place for part of 2019. With another year ahead, the recovery in 2020 will be even more impressive. The dramatic success during this first season is clear evidence that not only should the net ban be continued in these areas, but it should be expanded to include all the rivers and creeks in North Carolina.
Okay, Gregory G. followed by Chris Ellis.
Coastal waters, whether the bad commercial fishing market or their nasty gill nets. In this CCA paper also points out that Gilmet Closure Area is not responsible for the current boom of speckled trout, striped, and red drum. And then the next sentence, he states that the closure area should be extended all the way down to the mouth of the Pamlico Neuse and Big Rivers, out of Sweden. That statement perfectly sums up the whole reason that the CCA exists. CCA wants to complete elimination of the commercial fishing industry, starting with smallmouth gillnets, then largemouth gillnets, and then shrimp caught. Proposals put forth by the NC Coastal Conservation Association and the North Carolina Wildlife Federation scare me. What scares me more is my fear that most of the Marine Fisheries Commission wholeheartedly backs and actively endorses
30 seconds.
The ruinous proposals. I suggest that the Marine Fisheries Commission look at the current laws, and you will see that smallmouth nets are already heavily regulated. Because someone driving down the US 264 at 9 miles an hour, you don't change the speed limit to 20 miles an hour. If someone breaks current rules, let law enforcement catch that person and prosecute him. Don't come up with a new rule.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay, Chris Elkins, followed by Tim Burton.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, and Seth, you know, Seth, thank you for the opportunity to comment tonight. I'm speaking about the founder. Way back in founder, one of the original Southern Founder FMP, the division came up with some conservative measures, recommendations. CCA supported them. Later, also some conservative ones. Unfortunately, those recommendations were not followed. Perhaps if they were, we'd all still be flounder fishing now. Now, you all inherited a terrible mess of southern flounder, but I got to give you guys credit. Last year, you guys put in a tough measure. And a lot of people are thankful for that. Especially would like to thank the chairman for pushing that through. Unfortunately, it wasn't quite enough to stop the overfishing, but it's a good start. I'm hopeful that this year we'll do better. And it also gives some hope that Amendment 3, that you all are going to do this year, and that you're going to do something to finally end overfishing. Because I'm sure you don't want me to commission that failed and at the Institute of the Moratorium. Okay, the reason I'm really here tonight is to talk about allowing recreational fishermen not catch but catch other species of to advocate for species specific management. Now we have the Gulf and summer flounder, which are not overfished. And if it's possible for to train recreational fishermen to identify these other species, there's no reason why we cannot open the fishery for those fishermen. It's actually a significant amount of fish that they catch. Detail here, some background details I might be to go over. And so I'm asking that you all consider moving forward soon, not waiting for the FMP, because it really has something to do with the founder of FMP, but move forward and ask the director if he thinks it's possible to open both inside and outside waters to non-southern flounder. Thank you.
Thank you. exclusively the noose. I will address my comments there. Your action on behalf of Striker Bass has so far been successful. WRC biologists are reporting information of big strikers in the noose, just what the moratorium was intended to produce. Big spawning females protected from net mortality and no keeper for wrecks. That will bolster striper spawning. The moratorium has produced other beneficial effects as well. Trout populations have exploded. Not only more trout, but more quality trout. That has resulted in increased recreational angler participation. At Lee's Landing, for example, the parking lot has been overflowing with trailers lining the road to the ramp almost daily this past fall and so far this winter. More fishermen than I've seen at any time using Lee's Landing. Fishermen from other areas have been traveling to New Bern to trout fish. All of this confirmation of what many in the recreational community have been saying for years, that getting rid of nets will result in more fish and more fishermen. Anglers who will spend a lot of money. Economic benefits is another positive effect of the moratorium. Keep the moratorium, and at the very least expand it to the tidal lines. Additional areas will reap the benefits of recreational anglers getting the water and spending prodigious amounts of money in pursuit of increased fishing. Better yet, banish the nets and all the nature of water. Thank you.
Thank you. Our rules of action 10.
Sanctuary up here. I fish all electronics, leave away. Sluggin Hancock have been getting at it. You can put all the rules in place that you want to. If they're not policed, if the fishery and the wildlife don't work together to enforce these rules, we're being in the plan zone. And I understand that there's bad apples in every group. You've got your bad recreational, you've got your bad commercial fisheries. And even so, holding these sludges accountable, when they get caught, instead of slap on the wrist and $100 fine, you need to sort of take the license. Recreation, commercial, the whole nine yards, hold people accountable for what they are. And as far as the shrimp trawling, that is the worst thing in the sound. A lot of folks don't understand. If you take a trawler, you're complaining about it. It's the same thing if they took a log of crew and went from here to rock, clear to 60 foot wide, and nobody else, they made a street. From here to rock, that would get people's attention. They don't see what's going on under that roof. So, pretty much, the rules that are in place need to be enforced, and there's better ways. If all these commercial guys can catch fish, give them a 75 limit and a mirror loop, letting them catch them just like I have to catch them with my clients. My mirror lures are pretty, I can say safe. We have a couple that die every now and then, deep looking and all that, that happens. But if you catch 150 fish, there's only one person on the boat, that's 75 of them back to the drink dead that nobody else will ever get to catch. So that's my 2 cents on this.
Thank you. Jeff Martin, followed by Ryan, that was Thompson, I believe.
Thank you, Commissioners. My name is Jeff Martin. I just wanted to bring up the incident that me and my brother experienced back in mid-January on Bay River. We put in the land in the unit in Bay River. As we made our way up by where the old fish houses were, that sort of thing started. Now both sides of Bay River, all the way out to Shrimp Creek, all in Shrimp Creek. And even though Bay River is above the ferry line and they are allowed to set nets in there, there was nobody setting them. And I don't understand the carve out of Bay River, Shrimp Creek, and the surrounding areas there on Bay River, why nets could be set even though they are above the ferry line and nobody had to stay with them and maintain them. We did catch a few small trout that day, and when I say small, they were all small. It was basically the ones that wasn't in the nets. And that's my question. I'll just hope to get some kind of answer on why there's a fog out the back here, and why the nets are allowed to be there, and people don't have to set it.
And I think that's the time constraints to address after this session will be later.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. Hey, Ryan, I guess it is Chris Thompson.
Okay, great. Well, Raymond, great. Okay, so my name's Ryan. It's the first time I'm speaking to someone on this. I appreciate you letting us come and voice your opinion. It seems like we're headed in the right direction on a lot of things. On a lot of other things, it seems like things like the flounder rules this past year. I work at a local tackle shop, I work in conservation. Things like taking away flounder from even recreational guys and commercial guys, but then leaving a season in afterwards for commercial guys where I can, as a citizen of this state, go catch a flounder for dinner, which I could easily do most of the time, but I can go buy one. Just seems backwards to me. That's one of the things that's really bothering me about the things that have been done lately. The fact that we're allowed 4 fish trout a day, but most of them are going to wind up in a net anyway. And closing that flounder fishery also affected the amount of pressure from both rec and commercial guys on trout this year. I think that taking it away from them, instead of regulating it and putting common sense laws in place, instead of just delving the pressure off to another fishery, is going to help across the board with everything. I mean, I don't have all the answers, but I mean, we're for example, in on the flounder fishery, not this past year, but the year before, say we saw, this is just one skew, 2 ounces for a bucktail, which we mainly use in the ocean to catch summer flounder, not southerns. We'd sell 200 to 250 of them in a month. Last year I sold 12. I mean, it's taken away from my business, taken away from everyone. I don't think we're headed the right direction. I think that there are common sense laws for both of us, and I think that us commercial guys and rec guys need to start working together and not be so pitted against each other. I think that there's a way to do this for good for everyone. And until we start talking about it together in this federal situation, I don't think anything changes. I think we keep kicking cans down the road, and there is a way to make this better, and I hope that we can all get on the same page and everyone will start talking openly to each other without hating on each other, trying to get this right, because we have the potential to be an absolutely amazing fishery, and the rules that we have in place now are not letting that happen. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Raymond, that is written. Yes, and Jetson Brock.
The name Greg Britton, apologize for some of the sits. I appreciate the opportunity to talk. I didn't really have anything prepared either, but when I saw that the Squamish was on the table for discussion, I wanted to make a few comments in regards to that. This is the first time I've ever seen, I've been fishing this area, or not from Topsail, but I operate springtime guide service of the guide. This is the first time in 40 years of fishing that I've seen this type of fishing myself. I heard about it when I was a kid, I'd never experienced it. We had a lot of days on charters, 150 to 170 fish days this year. It was amazing. Normally in December, my business is slowing down. I was ready to head out and take a trip after the season was over, and I kept getting booked through December and January. I'm still getting calls. The difference is what we've seen in the sanctuary and what I've been watching and I've gone up and experienced it, it's pretty amazing. What I would ask is, we kind of set a precedent with flounder fishing this year. First rules, you know, first time there's ever been any kind of closure on those. It did affect my business, but at the same time, I'm glad to see some measures put in place, so roll on. I think the biggest thing, though, is there was a precedent set there. The general public got a shot at them, and the commercials got a shot at them. That didn't take any legislative action. That was done right there. So, with the rules on smallmash, I ask that you kind of look at different ways outside of the box to eliminate some user conflict that's going on in the area. In the Topsail area, we're having a lot of problems with, I understand we're managed by fisheries reform back in 97, we have to manage for both user groups equally. But you put a season on commercials and a season on recreationals, and somehow that's, you know, managing equally. So you can do the same thing for trout going forward with this smallmash thing. We've got a lot of problems right now with gill netters setting on Saturday in the creeks where there's 5-10 guys fishing recreationally and they run the nets right through us. I'm not saying eliminate them. I'm saying let's eliminate some of the user conflict. Maybe put a season on them. Let the general public come in through January 15th, March, whatever. Those trout are in their streets, they're not going anywhere. Give the general public a chance to go in and catch them. Let them come in afterwards and take the rest. If there's an excess, let them come get them and sell them. You know, if we have to manage for both user groups, there is a way to do it where both user groups can fish, everybody can have a good season, and they can still make money as well. That's it. So there you go.
Thanks so much. Okay, Jason Brock, all about why it's like a parcel per se.
From Rule 6 laws, I apologize. My name is Joe Brock. I'm a charter captain out of the Wilmington area. The recreational fishing is
issues that I see in the areas that I fish. Just recently, I just noticed year after year that the schools of redfish that we typically see in the marsh, of larger fish, is waning in much smaller schools and areas where we used to have lots of fish in the winter. We don't have fish and lots of little fish. And just for an example, just last week, there's a school of redfish that I've been able to target with clients. And I went in there and caught 12 fish and pulled gill net chunks off of multiple small redfish. There's no trout in this area. It's way, way back in an area that's hard to get to. And all these fish have been targeted with the gill net. The larger fish that I had been seeing in that area were no longer there. It's just frustrating, it's frustrating that, and I argue as a tour captain, but also as a recreational fisherman, someone who wants to go out and catch these fish and enjoy these moments with these clients to go target these fish, and I can't even, catch a 20-inch fish anymore because they've all been taken out of there by gill nets. And another thing, too, Ray was speaking on the New River, that's an area that I really enjoy trout fish, and it was so strong this fall, and the numbers of those fish are just... even on the good days, now you're not catching them, you're catching them all. And I've been driving up the road here to fish the Noose River with some friends up here and having extremely strong days catching trout in areas where the nets are not allowed, and areas where, I was catching 50 to 100 trout in a day. I'm catching 5 or 6 on a good day now. I just see the amount of fish that are taken out of the water with these nets. And the amount of injured redfish, big fat scars on their backs and along their pectoral fins and under their gills. A lot of times dead redfish floating in the creeks along where the schools are this time of year. They're just so easy to target. I mean, you send that and the whole school can swim into it extremely easy. So I don't have a long speech taken, or a long speech prepared, but I think we need to figure out something to do about smallmouth gill nets. I think they're destroying the fisheries here that we have for killing small redfish and killing wasting the trout. So that's it.
Thank you very much.
My name is Wyatt Parcell. I'm the community director for Salt Strong, as well as a very avid recreational angler south of here in Wilmington. I've driven over 2 hours tonight to have my voice, as well as over 12,000 recreational anglers in my Salt Strong community heard. It is clear there is a problem with the way that our fishery is being managed. We do not have the closures and current issues we do. This is the case. Members of my community, guides, and myself have observed the negative effects of this management starting with illness. We have documented pictures in front of you. I've got more if you don't believe me. Parasite infested redfish with open wounds, scars that are clearly caused by gill nets, and in some cases with netting still around their gills. We watch nets decimate our creeks, hauling hundreds of trout off daily, leaving only dead fish that didn't survive the netting. And we watch flounders get ripped off by commercial fishermen removing them from nets, only to be discarded back into the ocean because they weren't even legal size. North Carolina only has one study for discard mortality from gill nets, and that species evaluated with summer flounder. In 2018, State Observers reported a 24% discard of mortality for flounder gill nets. This number does not even include shrimp trawl bycatchers, as this fish that died after being re-released. We do know from several scientific studies conducted in other states the stress and injuries that these gill nets cause actually kill more fish after the release. The study showed a true discard mortality rate of between 64 and 78%. While redfish and trout have not been studied at the same level, the trend appears to be the same based on what all the recreational animal community has observed. Banning gill nets is the first step to solve this problem, but there's an even bigger issue once you look at how many fish these nets take. Stats from the most recent year data available, 2017, show that North Carolina harvested more redfish, speckled trout, and flounder than any other state on the list. Let me share some facts with you. For our speckled trout, in 2017, North Carolina commercially harvested almost 30,000 pounds of trout. That's 5.5 times greater than the next state on that list, Virginia. Our 2017 harvest for our state fish, the red drum, was a little over 186,000 pounds. That's 3.3 times greater than the next state on the list. To put that in perspective, recreational anglers have harvested less than 25,000 pounds that year. For our recently closed flounder, 2017, the commercial harvest totaled over 1.5 million pounds. Put that in perspective, that was 60 times more than the recreational anglers harvest. This level of commercial harvest is killing our fisheries. You can see the trends in your own data on your websites. Your commercial limits need to come down. Stop killing. Stop reverse wooding fish stocks. I am the recreational angler that needs to be heard because the recreational fishing industry in North Carolina is valued at below end for $4 billion, while the commercial fishing industry in North Carolina is valued at a mere $78 million. North Carolina has the potential to be a world-class fishery, but with this style of management, we might never see a day where we don't have a fishery at all. Consider these comments and upcoming legislation. I am the recreational angler. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ethan.
My name is Kat Zee, daughter back from Top Lot, North Carolina. And I've had some problems with gill netters in the area that I'm in. A lot of nets are in across mouths and creeks, which is how loud. And up in the flats, you know, the last few years I found some really large schools of redfish of good size. And this year I've just been finding smaller fish. And when I do come up on those fish, and there was one incident where there was a school of a good 100 fish in a flat. And came back in the next day and there's about 20 fish left. And all of those fish had gill net scars all the time. I've also been up in creeks where netters will come in and set their lines and then start their boats and start banging on their boats and pushing fish into their nets. And if you're someone that sees that and you love the water, like most of us do, that gives you a sour taste in your mouth. You know, we love our fishery. I love my job. And the goal is to make sure that we have a thriving fishery. I also own another business on the island that capitalizes on tourism. And when people come down out of state and come fish or come to visit, you know, people are going to take your recommendation on where to stay, where to eat, where to buy your tackle, where to get your fishing license. And all of that ties into, you know, what is it bringing to our local economy as well as protecting our fisheries. You know, if we can bring local money, put money into our local areas, our local beach towns, that's the goal. And the fishing industry has the potential to do that for our areas. And if we can protect our fishery, we can bring clients down here and show them what our fishery is capable of doing. It's a win-win for not only people that own businesses on the islands or, you know, own their homes on the island, but, you know, it does more for, you know, the people that love it as well. So I didn't prepare too much, but that's all I got to
say. Thank you. Has everybody had a chance to address the commission of care soon? Yes, sir.
It's about time some people get their head out of their ass and start looking at the numbers and talking with a little bit of common sense. From Texas to South Carolina, they pulled the gear out of the water. Southern flounder overfished in South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, Texas, Alabama. Speckled trout are overfished in Texas, Alabama, Florida. There's two counties in the state of Florida right now where you can harvest red drum and speckled trout. The gill nets have been out of the water since the mid-90s. Some of the folks in this room are aware of these numbers, and they'll still come in here and spout off this crap. I had no intention of speaking tonight, but it's absolutely absurd that you know this is occurring in these other states. The trawling's removed, the gill nets are removed, and the fish are overfished. It does not matter how a fish is killed, it only matters if it is killed. If you remove more than the stock and replace, no matter what gear you use, you will overfish or not. And that's all we should focus on. And until we start talking with a little bit of common sense and being cordial to each other, we're going to go down the same path these other states have done. We're going to ignore water quality, we're going to destroy our habitat, and we're going to destroy our fisheries. And I hope you all will take what's been said tonight with a grain of salt and get your facts right before you make any decisions with farm estimates in this state. Thank you.
Anybody else that needs to address the commission? If not, we will close this public comment session. We will convene tomorrow at 8:34 in the morning time.